Boarding on October 3rd. And in just a moment, I'll tell you what we're thinking about here today.
Blockage and the News. From Washington, the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations present Mr. Blockage with his midday summary of Washington and World News. But before he begins, here's an announcement of interest to all of us. A new kind of program comes your way on most of these ABC stations tonight when Kate Smith calls. Star of the show is Kate Smith, whose charm and personality all America loves. Each Monday evening, Kate Smith calls folks all over America to give them an opportunity to win thousands of dollars worth of prizes. Here's how the game is played. Tonight, Kate Smith may call you to ask you a question about the lyrics to one of the great songs you'll hear on the program. And if you can answer, you will be given the opportunity to try to identify Kate's famous friend, a personality whose identity is veiled in three clues that Kate will give you. Yes, fun and melody and an opportunity and a fortune in prizes await you on this great show. Be sure to be listening tonight when Kate Smith calls on this station. Wherever you are, she may call you. And now here is Mr. Blockage.
Blockage talking. Bright and very pleasant here today. Fair over most of the country except from the central Mississippi Valley, where it's been raining steadily. The hurricane is still hurrying along the Texas coast. We have quite a mild flu epidemic, which includes my doctor and all his family. Wasn't a very pleasant weekend as far as the news went. Justice Douglas, was severely injured when his horse rolled down a steep slope from a trail in the Chinook Pass area. A little while ago, you remember, in the neighbor state of Oregon, Senator Morse suffered a bad fall. Douglas has excellent chances for recovery, although his injuries were severe, 13 broken ribs and a punctured lung. He had intended to fly to Washington for the opening of the Supreme Court today. The Senate Judiciary Committee this morning approved the appointment of former Senator Sherman Minton to fill the place of the late Associate Justice Rutledge, but the Senate still has to confirm the appointment, so that left only 7 members on the bench when they can convene. Senator Minton's appointment is certain, but he had to stand up to certain questions concerning his views in the days when he was an ardent supporter of the New Deal. Similar excursions into the dark past are being made into the case of the reappointment of Federal Power Commissioner Olds. Many people are questioned about what happened in their past when they were young and gay. Other events, not unexpected but no less disturbing, are the steel strike and the recognition of Red China by the Soviets. The latter means trouble in the United Nations. The Russians simultaneously broke relations with the Chinese nationalist government. That would mean that Russia will probably demand that the Chinese nationalist delegate be ousted and the representative of the Red government, if and when it is admitted into the United Nations, take his place, the place of China's seat on the Security of Council. China, you know, is one of the permanent members of the Council with the right to veto. I note that some pessimists are already speculating on the possibility of the communists coming into power in France. If that did come about, the communist bloc in the United Nations would control the Council, but that's a long look ahead for trouble, although strikes are brewing in France. Russia can be expected to drive pretty hard bargains now that she has the bomb, and the most optimistic thing that one can say is that perhaps she's now willing to try some kind of a compromise in order to stop the threat of war. The weekend saw a peace celebration in the Russian zone of Germany, coupled with formal charges that the United States, Britain, and France had broken the terms of the Potsdam Agreement by setting up the new government in Western Germany. Creation of a communist Eastern German state now seems to be imminent. The Soviet, however, could hardly be very much flattered by what happened when, as part of their celebration, they temporarily opened the zone frontier for the purpose of allowing Germans to come in and see how serene and beautiful things were behind the curtain. But the traffic was all the other way. East Zone Germans broke through in considerable numbers to buy food and eat. Some 600 turned back with the German police on the Bavarian border, shouted that they didn't want to make any political demonstration. All they wanted was to come in and fill their stomachs. Tension has increased inside Yugoslavia, but reports from Belgrade say there isn't any fear so far there of any actual armed attack by Russia or the satellites, all of whom now have renounced their treaties of friendship with Tito. The immediate question is recognition of the communist government in China by the Western powers. That'll probably be taken up very soon. Britain is ready, but awaits further discussion with this country. Members of the North Atlantic Pact also and the British Commonwealth nations are concerned. As you know, it's always been the policy of this country to maintain relationship with other nations, regardless of whether we were sympathetic with their form of government or not. We want to keep in touch with them as closely as possible. Another complication may arise. Will Russia refuse to sit on the Four-Power Council of Japan with a representative of the Chinese nationalists? It looks very much as if foreign policies all over the world would have to be reshuffled. One thing is clear. Either we get some kind of an agreement with Russia, or we face the greatest armament race in history. One trouble spot that used to be the traditional tinderbox, the Balkans, is the center of conciliatory effort on the part of the United Nations. President Romano called a special meeting of the four-power conciliation committees. Invitations will be sent to the representatives of Albania and Bulgaria to appear before the group. The other nations involved, Greece and Yugoslavia, have member delegates in New York. Yugoslavia has closed its border with Greece, but there is serious trouble possible if the other two satellites continue to aid the communist-led guerrillas. In the United Nations Political Committee, the question of the Italian colonies will be taken up, and there's some hope for an agreement there. A more explosive subject is the charges that Hungary and Romania violated their agreements regarding civil and religious liberty. The United States delegation may suggest that question be referred to the International Court of Justice. The Latin American countries, solidly Catholic, will all press the charges involving the persecution of the church. Now for an announcement, I'll be back with more news and comment in just a moment.
Have you made your contribution to your local community chest? When you give to this fine organization, you're giving to neighbors less fortunate than you are. You see, 4 out of 10 families in community chest cities throughout the country are receiving some direct service through health and welfare work supported by the Community Chests of America. And everyone benefits indirectly through better community conditions. Some of the services supported through this organization are aid to the handicapped, the USO, the Boy and Girl Scouts, Boys Clubs, Campfire Girls, Children's Aid, Community Centers, Homes for the Aged, Hospitals, and the YM and YWCAs. There are, in fact, Red Feather services numbering up to 14,000. This year, $185 million are needed by the community chests. So give generously and give today to your local community chest. Remember the community chest slogan, give enough for all Red Feather services. And now, here again is Bockage with his commentary on the news.
The labor situation doesn't look very hopeful. Bill Murray's union is standing pat on his demand for pensions paid for by the management. The steel management will not budge from its position that the miners should contribute. The president shows no sign of any direct move immediately beyond the possible efforts of Conciliator Ching to renew the negotiations. John Lewis has sent his 102,000 coal miners back to work, but this leaves 400,000 on strike. Without coal, the steel mills couldn't operate anyhow. Ford is understood to have a stockpile of steel, but if Chrysler and the others do have it, it won't do them any good unless they follow the Ford pattern, which Reuther intends to establish for the entire industry or call a strike. The other industries are being hit by the steel strike and coal. Railroads are furloughing workers. Iron ore shipping in the Great Lakes is feeling the blow. Dockhand members of the CIO steelworkers have joined the nationwide walkout. There appears to be a chance of settlement of the Hawaiian dock strike. Since the hard coal miners have been ordered back to work, domestic consumers won't feel so much of a pinch. Industry is said to have only 46 days' supply of soft coal available. It's estimated that if steel and coal workers stay out another month, it'll run up a bill of $1 billion. And there is danger that some 500,000 members of the steel union in 700 fabricating plants, whose contracts start running out October 15th, will walk out too. Their demands are the same as the other steel workers. If steel negotiations don't get going, there's always the possibility, of course, of an injunction under the Taft-Hartley Act. There would certainly be as much of an emergency If steel and coal, both basic industries, were tied up, as there was when the injunction was invoked before. The president, under certain war powers in connection with the Selective Service Act, could seize the plants if contracts with the government were involved. In the midst of the enforced leisure of so many workers, the American Federation of Labor's Executive Council passed a resolution in which it said that if the economy is to remain sound, I'm quoting, our developing productivity and technology must be leisure providing as well as labor saving and must lead to shorter hours and higher living standards for all rather than unemployment for a growing number. Leisure for the GIs who are expecting education and training is ahead for many if the recent drastic cuts for the Veterans Administration remain in effect. The vet letter issued by the Army Times admits that it'll require legislation to reinstate the program, but it also says that Senator Taft led a discussion of a group made up of members of Congress and Veterans Administration officials behind closed doors on Thursday. After 4 hours, not very much progress was reported, but supporters of relief for the schools and the veterans claimed they were hopeful of a compromise. The Taft bill, which would take care of this situation, can hardly be passed this session with the opposition of Representative Rankin of Mississippi, a chairman of the Veterans Committee. He has some very definite ideas of his own on veterans aid. Today, the Senate turns its attention to a farm program. Since that's going to be a big issue in the next campaign, the air is full of politics. Specific question under consideration is the compromise farm bill worked out by Senator Anderson and the Department of Agriculture. This measure underwrites farm prices a little bit higher level than the Aiken long-range bill, but it's enough like it so that it has Senator Aiken, Republican of Vermont, and some other Republicans behind it. But some Republicans and Democrats also want higher price supports. The Senate killed the Aiken bill introduced last session. This session it killed the Brannon bill, which would allow prices to rise and beyond a certain point subsidize them and give the benefit of the difference to the consumer. At present, the old wartime high supports are still in effect. There's a good deal of pressure for an expanded Social Security bill to try to block these demands of pensions from the industry. Also a measure to encourage building of moderately priced houses. But an agreement was reached today to postpone the civil rights until next session. And while the legislators fish for votes, the League of Women Voters, a nonpartisan organization, is trying to produce more voters. They put out a very attractive little pamphlet in the form of a quiz entitled, What's the U.S. to You? No free ice boxes or trips to the North Pole are offered as prizes, but something that ought to mean more than that to you, participation in your government. How do I become a voter? How can I join a party? When? Where? Who are the representatives in the local party committee? And so forth. That's all, and thanks very much. And now a friendly word from your announcer.
What would you say is the necessary background for a news commentator? Well, most folks would expect the man to be a journalist with an extensive background in news coverage. They would expect him to be well-traveled and to have first-hand knowledge of the foreign countries he talks about. They would expect him to be personally acquainted with many of the men who make the policies of industry and labor and political parties all over the world. And they would, of course, expect him to have a thorough knowledge of economics and political science and people from all walks of life. This theoretical background for a commentator just about fits that of the well-known journalist, economist, and war correspondent, Henry J. Taylor, who is heard over many of these ABC stations with a weekly program called Your Land and Mine. Tune in Henry J. Taylor tonight. Bockage will be heard tomorrow at this time over most of these same ABC stations, with his personalized summary of Washington and world news. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.